Brought to you by Face to Face Games.
The first rule of Fight Club is...
Okay, people.
Oh, man.
It is time. Woo! It is time to call the Thundercats this week. We are bringing the Thunder. Welcome to Hype Club. As always, I am Matty Studios.
I'm Awesome Sauce.
And we are here to bring the hype. We're going to jump right in because we had an incredible weekend. Pre-release Aether Revolt. Holy cow. I'll start off with Maximum Hype because apparently some people said we did that Maximum Hype last week. Talking to you, Mealing. but I actually, for the first time, opened the best I have ever opened any Magic product in my life. I hit Foil Chandra, Shaheely Rai, and in my prize packs, a god darn Expedition Sword of Body Bite.
What?
And I faced Rich Hohen, Limited Master, in the last round. Oh, and he beat me because he's just a Stone Cold Master. But what a time. I had a great time. It was a packed house, man. Oh, by the way, huge shout out to Kelly for fitting me in the event. Apparently I forgot to actually sign up to the event like a chump, but he found a spot, got me in.
So. I almost guarantee you that that's my fault. So it was a busy weekend. I mean, we had like 80 people booked in for Friday at midnight.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's how it started. We hit the ground running.
It was awesome, though. I mean, we had Durf there, if everyone knows, at Durfington. He's the master of the avatars. He was there. He opened horrible, but he still managed to crush, so.
You know. No, actually, yeah, Durf had a great time, and it was interesting because we went out for lunch with Durf, and, you know, one of my oldest best friends, you know, back from grade school went out together, and it was interesting because Durf and my friend Eric actually played each other. And and when we went out for lunch, Eric said the most interesting thing. He said, "Hey, I played against you round one, Dave, and I noticed that you smiled at me right away."
Yeah, and it wasn't anything creepy or nothing. It's
no,
just
not like a creepy.
It's just like being friendly, you know? Like,
yeah.
I think that's the one thing a lot of people don't do, is they get all focused on, you know, winning or something, and they forget that, like, hey, this is fun, man.
Yeah, and that's exactly what Durf said. He said, you know, I used to be a very hyper-competitive Magic player, and you get the blinders on, and it was all about winning or losing. And, you know, as soon as you can flip that switch off, you can open your world to a whole different experience. And you know, Eric and Durf meeting each other for the first time, like, instant friends. It was magic.
Yeah, it was really cool. It was very interesting. I built my pool next to Durf, and we had a bunch of people at our table. And, of course, when I opened the Shaheely Rai, everyone was like, Did you get the cat? And I'm like, I did not get the cat. So,
nope,
and then I didn't even end up playing Shaheely because I ended up building a red-black deck, which was absurdly broken. Like, this was the most powerful limited deck I think I've ever played. It's just absurd. Artifacts and then crazy, like, what is it? The 3-drop red-black guy that, like, he can give an artifact +2/+0 for the turn when it attacks. And I'm like, you know, okay, well, a servo token, smash you for 6, and, you know, my opponent's like, wait, what? Oh, yeah, I'm just going to do this every turn so you can stop it.
Yeah, no, when you showed me your pool, I think you had it, like, 95% correct. There's a couple of combat tricks and one little flyer in there that I liked a little bit more than one of your choices, but I think you nailed it. We went over your pool pretty harsh, and I think you nailed it, and like I said, you the only player you lost to was arguably the best limited player of all time.
Yeah, he wasn't losing. He was just crushing me. It was hilarious because in the last game, I beat him the first game. Just, you know, there was no way he's beating me that game. He came back the second game because now I guess he knew how my deck worked. And he played around. I don't even know how he did this because I'm reading every one of his cards he puts on the table because I'm like, what is that card? I don't know what that card is. He doesn't even care. He doesn't look at anything I'm playing. He just instantly is like, okay. And I'm like, oh, you're not going to do anything? I guess I'm going to win this game. You know, he's like flashing this giant green. Oh, wait, what? Oh, you just killed all my stuff? I'm dying. I'm panicking. And then I'm dead.
Oh, no. This parachute is a knapsack.
Oh, It was the worst. And then on game three, it was so bad. I got out to an incredibly fast start. I got him down to 10 life, and I'm like, I've got this. I'm going to beat Rich Owen. I'm going to go 3-0. And I have shit. I got, okay, so I actually got to cast Foil Chandra against Rich Owen game three, and I've already got him down 10 life. And I'm like, I've won. I have won.
Yeah, how
this
do
game.
You lose?
Let's how do I lose? How to lose? Yeah, well, guess what? You brick for 6 turns in a row, and he kills all your stuff. That's how you lose.
That's
and,
it. Nailed it. You figured it out, Maddie. I'm really impressed. you took an unlosable situation, and you got there.
Yeah. You know what? It's funny, because it taught me – it was just very interesting. In that situation, you know, obviously he's like a pro player. So he's there to win. He's practicing for, you know, the pro tour and stuff. So it was a very different, like, experience in game-wise. It felt very, like, high level, like, I better pay attention, you know, kind of nervous. And yet all my other rounds, I'm really playing and laughing and, like, having a great time with people. I met one new player that, you know, was asking me about formats, and he's like, oh, what do you play? And I'm like, well, you know, I play all kinds of formats, try to play everything, you know. But, you know, I really like Frontier right now. And he was like, oh, yeah, I heard about that. And we just started chatting, and he's like, you know, I really, really like to make tokens. And I'm like, oh, wow, like, if you like to make tokens, I got you. I'm like, you should be playing a Green-White Tokens list. And he was like, is there a Green-White Token list? I'm like, oh, there's such a Green-White Token list, buddy. It's called Hardened Scales.
There's a few, right? Now, yeah, there's a few. Now it's these new cards. Oh, man.
Yeah, we actually, there's quite a few lists. There's so much variation as well in terms of how you want to build decks right now in Frontier, which is just, it was awesome. At the end of the day, I watched you just like, I mean, you were selling Frontier decks left, right, and center, man. It was crazy. Just the hype I feel like people want to like brew and talk about this format is just, it's insane in the epicenter, I guess, of Toronto right now.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I mean, we switched our FNM from Standard to Frontier this week because, you know, it's the last week of Standard and everyone was a little sour on the bannings a little bit. And not necessarily sour, but they were just letting it sink in, you know. It just needed to waft over them so we could accept it and move on. But, you know, I had people come in Thursday night and say, I want to build Abzan. This is the dialogue. I want to build Abzan. Whose list do you want to build? Chris Haar, Matt Mealings. I want to build the one with Gideons. All right, let me pull up Chris Haw's list from the Sunday Showdown. Boom, boom, boom. There it is. You want foils or non-foils? All right, let's start with Foil Siege Rhinos because that's the bombest card in the deck, and we're going to build from there. And then Friday night they come back and, you know, crush the event.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of what I feel. It's just funny enough, we were talking about, we were talking about cards we still need to get, like, okay, because we do have a brew we're going to talk to you guys about in a second here. But there were other cards we're like, you know, maybe we should, like, buy this card right now because it's cheap. And one of them was Nissa. And I was like, yeah, it's getting hard to find. What do you think? And then, like, by the time I got home Sunday night, I look online. I'm like, oh, it's sold out everywhere. What's going on? And now, as of Monday morning,
the pool is completely frozen over.
Yeah. Apparently, it's dead. There's obviously something going on. Pro Tour, you know, hype maybe, or I know I personally saw a couple things in the beta, a couple people DM me. There definitely is a tokens list. It is competitive for Standard, so, you know,
yeah, I mean,
go
how
figure,
can,
right?
How can you not want to cast SRAM's Expertise into Nissa with Gideon backup? Like, these are just things that sound good.
I mean, we always say this, and I don't know how we forget it as players. We're like, hey, a 3-mana Planeswalker. It's garbage. It makes plants. And I don't know why we say that, because the 3-mana Planeswalkers are always, like...
No, it's
like
amazing it makes plants.
Yeah,
you ever tried to fight your way through that garden? Oh, man.
Yeah, seriously, right? Like, it is not fun. But that is a tip, though, that I have for anyone if you want, which is something I'm debating on doing. The whole dual deck right now is like $21 Canadian.
Get on it.
It probably by the time I... After this cast, it's going to be all sold out, but I don't know. I mean, you could buy a place at a dual decks, get all the cards for basically free, because this is about $20 now, which is insane. But
yeah,
it's Magic. What are you going to do? Now, let's get to something that, you know, I wanted to touch on real quick before we get to the deck, and that is, I've been getting a lot of emails, tweets, and, you know, DMs, and I know you have too, about people that just want to get into, not necessarily Frontier so much as, you know, I live somewhere, I have a small game store, how do I influence the game store itself to, you know, pick up a format or, you know, do something that I feel like, hey, I've got 10 friends, we all want to do something. How do we grow, like, a community, essentially what it was. Now, Nicholas, Reginald Rum 61, shout out to you. He had a bunch of questions for us. We are going to be doing a question and answer episode because we have a lot, and I feel like the show has to stay around the 45-minute mark.
And if people keep challenging us that saying that we're going to go to 3 hours, then we're going to keep sticking to 45 minutes.
Well, and we're going to fail every time.
We're going to have a really long B-side. It'll be great.
Yeah. I mean, our plan is once a month, maybe we'll do a Q&A cast. And, you know, so keep sending the questions, even if we don't answer them. I am keeping them all. But he had that question. He's like, you know, how do you kind of brew this? And he had a bunch of follow-up questions that, you know, may target. But a few people wanted to talk about, like, how we build a format. And I know Henry Dar, H-Bomb United, he also had a great question about, you know, how can Frontier enthusiasts help Wizards of the Coast make it an official format? So I think both of those questions are kind of related, because how do you influence a game store as a player, Tony?
Well, to be honest, you got to talk about it. You got to be visible about it, and you just got to put the pressure on a little bit, you know? You got to show interest, and it goes a really long way to just committing yourself. You know, if you can believe in it, then you can achieve it. Lame, yeah. Hype, whatever, I know, but it's totally, totally true. And that's how we started it at Face to Face Games Toronto. I came with Monkey Mealing, and we just brought like four decks, and we started playing with, you know, the Chris Haas and the Chirk Butts of the world and the JR somethings, and they were all, oh, what are you guys doing? You guys are kind of cool. Like, where you guys have shirts? What? When there's a tournament tomorrow, free fetch lands. What's going on? It all happened so quickly. But what it is we just did it. Like, you know, we were playing with our Frontier decks at the store, and then the store closed, and there were still five or six people around, and Kelly came over, and he's like, what are you guys all hyped about? What's going on over here? Oh man, this Frontier format, it's so great. Check this out. It's all these like sweet old standard cards bashing against each other. We're having an amazing time. We should host a tournament for it like next month, or, you know, we should get this community together. And Kelly, being, like I said, the incredible community minded business genius he is, said, no, we're hosting it this week. He's like, why would we wait a month? Let's do it this week. I said, okay, cool. Well, let's maybe throw in an extra vein. He's like, no. We're going to give out sick prizes. Winners all get playsets, like a playset of whatever fetch lands they want, because that seems to be the barrier of entry here. So we're just going to smash it down with the sledgehammer and say, we're going to open the door to everyone. But really, you just got to do it. Build some decks and play and have fun, because you can't play this format without having fun.
Yeah, and I think the one thing, you know, not everyone has a face-to-face Toronto. Like, you know, and I think what I would advise is, like, I live in an area where the game stores really aren't necessarily friendly to that. And in my opinion, I, like Tony said, you have to, if you love, let's say, we're going to use the term Frontier right now because that's just the growing format, but maybe it's Modern in your area, maybe it's Legacy. But really what it is if you have, like, cards, and, you know, if you put together four or five decks, because what's going to happen is you're going to go somewhere and people are going to be like, oh, that looks cool, but I don't have a deck. And if you have your deck ready to be like, hey, here's Target Red, do you want to jam some games? You're going to influence people. And if they have a really good experience with you and they like it, chances are they're going to probably go to the counter and say, okay, I need a list. What do we got? And they might build it. And if the owner of the store sees a bunch of people, you know, playing the format already at the store, it's pretty easy to convince them, hey, what's the slow night of the week? Maybe you could throw together a little event for us, you know, and start that way.
Yeah, and that it worked for us that, where, you know, Standard was in a bit of a downturn, and, you know, people weren't super excited about Modern in the current state. Like, it was a bit of a perfect storm to make it much easier for us than it would have been. But I am going to backpedal on what you said and make a little bit more of a suggestion, and build some mid-range decks instead of aggro decks. That force you to play a bunch of Magic with all the coolest cards. You know, like, there's tons of Jeskai blacklists out there that are super untuned and polished that are way more exciting than just the straight-up 4 Jace, 4 Soulfire Grandmaster lists, because you get to play any card you want in your Jeskai blacklist that isn't green. You know, you know what? Call it Jeskai green and play Siege Rhino if you want. But pick some mid-range decks that aren't going to kill each other on turn four and start battling each other and play some, you know, hour and 20 long matches where you just don't want it to end.
Yeah, and, you know, there's a lot of people that have made comments about the price and that. And, you know, check out Goldfish, mtggoldfish.com. I've been on that site since day one. I love those guys. We don't get paid anything from them. I just think it's the best resource for understanding card prices and actually just brews, formats, everything. It's just a useful tool now. It's part of my inventory. It's like when I brew, I use MTGO and Goldfish, and that's how I brew decks. That's how I look up what's going on in the metagame. So my suggestion is there is a ton of very competitive, like tier two, maybe even higher lists, like Mono White Humans. It's $80.
Yeah,
like, that's crazy, and it's a fun list.
Yeah, when you're on Goldfish too, look up some of the users like JR something or Chirkbutt or heaven forbid Maddie Studios. But these are some actually pretty tuned and polished lists because these guys are jamming on non-MTGO platforms where you can actually play a ton of Frontier. So, you know, X-Mage, Cockatrice, Untap, things like that. So those check out those users, JR something, Chirkbutt. You know, these guys have really, really good lists on there. And under the user submitted tab, Goldfish was nice enough to put a Frontier section. You should absolutely check it out.
Yeah, and you know, there's lots of things. Green White Scales, another deck that's like also really cool. But anyways, let's get to decks because me
How about
and Austin,
the deck?
Okay, yeah. Well, I don't know if it's the deck yet, but it is for us right now. It is the thing that we spend hours a day contemplating on, refining. I'm not gonna, you know, say we're pros. It's just this deck is we have put lots of time into it, and I think we have a lot of synergy. So, without further ado, I'm introducing to you Calling the Thundercats. This is a Frontier build. We have a link in the description if you want. Go check it out. We got the list on Goldfish. But essentially, the deck is a Court of Calling deck that is using Shaheeli Rai and the new cat. Now,
that doesn't sound interesting at all, Maddie. Why is this awesome?
I know, right? And that probably description is wrong because that's really not what it is. But that's kind of the overview of the deck. Now let's get deeper. This deck uses a ton of the deck uses a ton of engines. Okay, now I'm not the best at explaining probably the million interactions that are in this deck. So Tony, take it away and tell us how all these little pieces work together.
All right, so we're looking at a base green deck a la Jeff Hoogland style. So we have Elvish Mystic and Servant of the Conduit, you know, 4 and 3 respectively, just to make sure that we have all of our colors and all of our ramp on time because we are playing Court of Calling. So we do want to have, you know, a bunch of green creatures to make sure that we can actually hit our green to court out whatever we need when we need it. And the second part of this, like you said, is the 4 Felidar Guardian, 4 Saheeli Rai combo. So that's basically the core of the deck. Now, where it actually gets interesting is where we start to look at the sub synergies, and we don't have Collected Company in something like this because we have too many non-hits on it, you know, in the form of, like you said, Court of Calling and Saheeli Rai. But the interesting misses are the cards that we've found over time, which are Vessel of Nascency and Traverse the Uvenwald.
Now this part of the deck is the filter package. So I would almost say like this and Cord is how we're finding our pieces.
Absolutely. And Traverse acts as a Cord. Not only does it fix our mana on turn one the way an Elvish Mystic sort of would or does, but once we hit Delirium, it just gets out whatever we want for one mana. Mm-hmm. So the second part of the deck that makes this really interesting is we actually have a second combo kill in the deck that can win at instant speed. And this is what we're really, really playing the deck for. And it's 3 Impact Tremors.
Now, so tell people what Impact Tremors is because everyone is like, what is that card again?
Yeah, Impact Tremors is a common from Dragons of Tarkir. That's 1 in a red enchantment. Enchantment's important because you can find it with Vessel of Nascency. Mm-hmm. It says, whenever a creature enters the battlefield under your control, it deals 1 damage to each opponent. So that's cool. You know, you'd think with Saheeli Rai, you make a million Felidar Guardians and then they die that way, or you can attack them. But what's more interesting is if you have 2 Felidar Guardians, they just high-five each other back and forth until all of your opponents are exploded into oblivion.
And that's where the thunder comes from. So
that's the thunder.
Now the interesting thing is a lot of people at first glance look at this list. And, of course, we have a whole toolbox creature set we can pull. But they first look at the list and say, it's overly complicated. You should just be running the Felidar Guardian Shaheeli part. And our answer to that is, that's probably not enough. There's, you know, people are going to be prepared for that part of the combo, and maybe they're running Authority of the Council, which sucks because all our creatures enter tap and they gain 1 life. But with Impact Tremors out, we don't even need to attack. All we need to do is just keep going off. So if we have two Impact Tremors out, you can have an authority and we can still get around you.
Exactly. And the other thing that I really like about the Impact Tremors is with Court of Calling, it allows us to win in response to our opponents attempting to combo off. So an example of a line of play is you have a Felidar Guardian and an Impact Tremors in play, and your opponent activates their Saheeli Ray targeting Felidar Guardian. Before that resolves, you cast Court of Calling, get a second cub, or, heaven forbid, a clever impersonator, and combo off in response to them trying to combo off.
Now, you just spoiled one of the spicy little targets that this deck runs. Now, we run to Nahiri as well. Again, finds our combo. It interacts with enchantments, opposing enchantments, which are a problem. We do not like Authority of the Cancel, and the number one card we do not like is Hushwing Griff in the format. That is a card we got to get rid of because it kills our combo dead. But we can still beat you. So here's our toolbox, and it's really interesting. So we're running two Eldrazi Displacer. You can immediately see the synergy here. We can we can blink our own stuff and shoot you in the face.
It helps protect our creatures, and going into like a regular game where you're just playing the mid-range thing, every three mana is an effective removal spell every turn.
Also, all our creatures have Enter the Battlefield effects, so essentially, once we have a Displacer out, and any of our creatures, we can just make this effect go, which is really important. So we play one Reflector Mage, again, clear the board, get rid of anything we don't like. One Spell Queller, because we want to stop a spell we don't
like. Court of Calling for Spell Queller in response to a Siege Rhino is absurd.
Yeah, that's a pretty good line of play, just if you couldn't feel it. the other card we run is Thought Nutseer, of course. We want to take a look at their hand, and also just put a giant body on the ground, you know, see what you can do.
Yeah, we can jam it on turn three.
And one of the cards we found late, after trying the construct, Crackdown Construct, we tried that. We had the whole Wandering Fumeral.
Even though both of those pieces dodge Lost Legacy, and they're a standard available combo, so this could like sort of be a standard-ish deck for you, it wasn't doing it for me.
No, and you know what it was? We cannot have cards that enter the battlefield tap, and we'll get over that in the land base, but it's super important to not misstep with this deck. The last, or well, there's a couple of people, but the last big one that we landed on late in the game was Ishkana. And at first you're like, Ishkana? What is that for? Like,
well, it is the best card in Standard.
It's not only that. Not only is it just a giant big flyer, well, not that with reach that can stop flyers, it drops four bodies. So if you've got an Impact Tremors out, you just hit them for four. If you have a Displacer, you can just keep blinking to kill them very quickly.
And that doesn't even include activating Ishkana's Drain You for My Spider Babies.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you could probably just Displacer once and then have eight spiders and kill.
Yeah.
So there's that. Now, the sideboard has...
Well, we missed one more toolbox card, and this is one that has been a hot topic for debate between you and I. And
that's why I missed it.
The one of Elvish Visionary.
Yeah, this card is probably one of the second to last decisions we've made in the deck. Tony likes the draw engine on it.
I love it.
I know. You have a special... I personally am not yet sold on it, although I understand, you know, hey, maybe we get to a point where we're out of gas and we got to blink it. I get that rare scenario. It's fine. I'm not saying it's wrong.
It's great, people.
It's fine. Yeah, it's great. Just listen to Tony. It's good.
It's great.
okay, let's quickly go over the mana base, because this again was something that we've put a lot of time in, and here's where we're at. We got four Aether Hub, one Battlefield Forge, three Botanical Sanctum, one Canopy Vista, three Forests, one Island, one Mountain, one Plains, one Shivan Reef, two Wooded Foothills, and four Yavimaya Coast. Now, you can see that we're trying to get a lot of color this mana, because we want to activate our Eldrazi, which there's a couple of spicy Eldrazi in the sideboard, and we want everything that comes into play untapped if we can. That is crucial to do. The other thing is we really need to make sure we have green turn one.
Yeah, this only is five misses for green on turn one. I'm still not sold on this Canopy Vista, so maybe we need to look at it. It was a fourth Botanical Sanctum, which brings us up to 18 untapped green sources for Elvish Mystic and Traverse the Ovenwild, but I'm pretty comfortable with this. I do like the number of waste sources that we have, and now that we've added in three Servant of the Conduit, Aether Hub has been an all-star from a dud. I mean, we even tried almost cutting the Aether Hub, but it's just... You need to have the ability.
It's too universal.
Exactly. You need to have the ability to go turn one Elvish Mystic, turn two Saheeli Rai, turn three, play the cat. Oh, oops, I won.
Yeah, exactly. And like we have, green we're pretty good on, but we need to hit white, blue, and red. And that's like very hard to do with any other land. And it really has been an all-star so far. I've loved it. Now, let's get to the sideboard because I know a lot of you are like just saying, oh my god, guys, this combo is garbage and easily shut down. Any control deck is going to just make fun of you and, you know, you're going to be pushed around and all this. So let's talk about some sideboarding plans, shall we?
Well, for starters, we have to be able to beat the combo in the mirror.
Yes. So we're going for Authority of the Councils. Now, this is a card from day one I've been on, even when I started pushing this like way long ago. And Tony was telling me I'm crazy, this card's garbage. And this was before this deck even. I've been trying to
jam. To be fair, it's true, I did say that, but yeah. I reversed my stance.
This is just a great card. I love this card. I was trying to build a green-white Planeswalker deck, a Naya Planeswalker deck. So this was in my main. But I saw the utility of how good it is. So we're running four of these. This card comes in against anything that's heavy aggro, against a target red. This is automatic. We bring it in.
Absolutely.
Against the combo, we're bringing it in. And then I don't really think we bring it in anywhere else. I think that's primarily what it's for, is to survive. It's not really to win anything. It's just give us turns to draw. And then that's all we want. We conquer.
Yeah, against something like a Tarkered, like, we don't really want Impact Tremors. It doesn't really do anything. There's, like, Nikiri doesn't really do anything against them. So it's a pretty easy swap out for four, and that's why we like having so many. It also doubles down. So if you ever jam two by turn two against an Atarka Red deck, they will just not cast their Hordling Outburst, I promise.
Yeah, because it's – yeah, exactly, right? Now, the next card is a card that we're going to talk about, and I'm going to make a call. Hashtag the call. This card, I believe, is going to be probably one of the most important sideboard cards in all decks in Frontier. And here's why. Mastery of the Unseen is the control killer.
Shout out to Gumby.
I mean, there you go. Raging Gumby, way back in the day, he got second place at an SCG event with it. But that card is, I've had it played against me in Frontier and in Modern and in Standard. I don't like this card. But God, I love playing this card. Again, it's one of those cards we almost transform where we take out a part of the deck that the opposing player is trying to target and we put in this, which they have no answers for. You know, maybe a control deck's running one or two Anguish on making. But the point is, we get this off early and we start firing it off and we flip up our combo. I mean, like, it's so good. It's so good. So we're running three Mastery of the Unseen because they don't stack. We could run four. Again, flex slot, but I think three's right.
One more important thing to note about these seven slots specifically is that they're all enchantments, and that's why Vessel of Nascency was such an important find for us, because now we have ways to sort of dig for these sideboard cards.
Yeah, exactly. And that was Tony's contribution, like, real late when we were having consistency issues, and I could not believe how good this card has turned out. I actually am extremely shocked at how fast we can go through the deck. Now, the next card on our sideboard is a big one. It's Radiant Flames. We're running three. Again, you could run two and a Kozilek Return. We're still working that out. But we need some kind of sweeping removal. Again, just to clear out these decks that are trying to spam the board with tokens, humans, whatever.
This will be something that maybe, they can... Yeah, exactly. Deal with this token onslaught that's going to come. And the reason that you like three Radiant Flames over two Radiant Flames and a Kozilek's Return is because this green-white token deck and Hardened Scales is going to be prevalent, and I think that the creatures are not going to be 2/2s for very long. So no. I think you do want the additional plus one damage, and there could actually be an argument for one of these slots being just a Fumigate.
Yeah. Again, I don't know. That's metagame dependent. I mean, a lot of the next things we're going to talk about really are metagame. So it's like if the metagame in your local area is playing certain strategies, you know, these are flexible slots. But
so what we have is just to go over before we get to our flex slots, we have four cards to deal with the aggro decks because we are a combo deck and we don't really interact with them. We have three cards to deal with the control decks who think they already are better than us. And then we have three sweeper slots, however that looks like in your metagame.
Right.
So that's 10 cards.
Now we've got five cards left, and they're all spice. And you know, again, this is where you can get creative. You know, you want to make this deck themed it yourself. You know, put Chitara in here, put Panther. We don't know who you choose your roster. but here's what we've got. So we're running one Rexage, obviously to deal with enchantments and artifacts, because who knows? It's always a good one. We just fetch, get rid of a Panharmonicon, or
it's great in the mirror. You know.
Yeah. Right.
It can blow up opposing authorities, or heaven forbid, other people are playing Impact Tremors too.
Yeah. The one thing that we found is the deck still can get run over, and we wanted a Thragtusk, but that doesn't exist in Frontier. And we were
it
kind of does. It's a baby Thragtusk. So we're running Arborback Stomper, which is, I know you're like, what is that again?
Yeah. What?
It's the 5 mana costing 5/5, I think it is.
5/4.
5/4 trample.
With trample that enters the battlefield and gains you 5 life.
Right. So this is another reason why we have 2 Eldrazi Displacers in the main. We initially just had 1 because we were like, we'll just cord for 1. And we found that if that card dies, that's not good. We always want that card back because that card allows so much flexibility to play pattern. So we're running 2 in the main just for, because if we ever just get this out and blink a couple times, it's going to be very hard to come back.
Yeah.
Now we're running an extra Ishkana right now, but that slot has been changed as of before this cast to Surak. No, is it Surak the Hunt Caller?
No, Dragon Claw.
The Dragon Claw. So that card, Tony, read this card because I forgot this existed in the format.
Yeah, so Surak costs 2 and Teemer, so red, green, blue, and it's a 6/6 with flash that can't be countered. It says your other creatures can't be countered, and your other creatures have trample.
So, if anyone remembers Modern, Thrun was the card that we would run in Green Machine as the control counter. So it's like, oh, well, a control deck is just going to counter all our stuff, and we're like, well, Thrun. Oh, can't deal with it? Great, let's smash. The fact that this is probably better than Thrun in this deck, and that it gives all... basically, we can just play whatever we want now, is pretty insane. Yes, our Court of Callings get countered still, but point is, we can start to draw into our stuff and then counter and still win. So I love that card.
Yep.
We're running 1 Sigarda, Herons of Grace. Now, this is a shout-out to basically Standard, and the tech people came up with against Emrakul. You know, Marvel decks are still a thing in Frontier. They can flash in all kinds of stuff. So Sigarda is a huge one.
Emrakul, you know. Emrakul has been finally vanquished by the ultimate power of Liliana and pushed completely out of the format by a WotC banning.
Yeah, I thought she got put in the moon, but whatever.
Moon, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, now the last card was something that I came up with.
But before we go on, I wanted to make a quick note on Sigarda. When this card first came out, everyone thought that it was exile a creature card from your graveyard to make a 1/1 human soldier. Oh man, you make humans. This is amazing with Thalia's Lieutenant. This is cool. Well, hold on. Let me read that again. Exile a card? Any card? And make a 1/1 human? Okay, this is bananas.
Yeah. So this...
and then your tokens have hexproof.
I mean, even if all you had is Sigarda and Impact Tremors out, you can just be like, Megadude, ping you for 1. Megadude, ping you for 1. Or redirect to a Planeswalker. Like,
yep.
This is also just one of those engines that just keep going. And the last card that I put in here, probably because I was influenced by Banth Eldrazi and Modern, is 1 Drowner of Hope. Just the fact that we can run the Drowner Eldrazi combo and the fact that it's making tokens, Impact Tremors, wow. We're tapping your team. We're smashing through. That's the list in general. There is infinite ways we could explain all types of interactions with this deck. It's actually, we're still discovering them to this day. But we encourage you guys, check out Goldfish, check out the list, brew it up if you got it, play it. I think this list looks incredibly fun. Now, the one thing I did want to touch on is toolbox decks are really good investments in terms of getting into a format. And the reason is, as new cards come out, your toolbox may change, but the engine of the deck is not.
Yeah, so I would be very, very happy to have a pile of cards that look like Saheeli Rai and Felidar Guardian with Elvish Mystic, Servant Conduit, Traverse the Uvenwald, and Court of Calling. Start there, and then have fun. That gives you your base of casting everything. It gives you an infinite combo. It lets you win at instant speed if you play the Impact Tremors. But if you just start there, then just build your toolbox around that. Maybe you want to play a Siege Rhino, like Maddie always tries to put in the deck every single time we talk about it. Every single time.
Literally, every single time.
Every single time. What about Siege Rhino? Maddie, we're not playing black.
Who cares? We're fetching for it. I just, like, in my head, I'm just like, why don't we just drain them? Why don't we just, like, they're thinking we're doing this. We're like, we took all the cats out. We're just throwing rhinos at your face now. But no. There's a lot better options. But the point is, have fun. Brew this deck. This is one of the decks that we're keeping in our gauntlet right now. And, you know, as people come into the format, again, we talked earlier, you know, hey, well, you got any cool decks in Frontier? Yeah, actually, we got a really good deck. You like Thundercats? Here you go. And it's interesting that this deck, for someone coming up from Modern, let's say, they're going to be really familiar with how, like, a toolbox core deck works, hopefully. So it's a really nice way to say, hey, you know, maybe you're playing, you know, Kiki-Jiki in Modern, and you want to kind of find those same play patterns in Frontier. It exists. And yeah, you basically have a twin combo in here for free. So.
Exactly. And I really like the fact that this is very similar to a Jeff Hoogland-style Kiki Core deck, because what this deck will do is reward you for playing the deck a whole bunch, knowing your cards inside and out, and being one step ahead of the metagame with some of your card choices. You're going to get savagely rewarded by just being on top of the metagame with this. And one combo that we didn't actually mention is if you have a Nahiri and a Saheeli in play, not only do they high-five each other because the art is really cool, but Nahiri can ultimate to find a cub, and then you can go off with Saheeli in play.
Yeah. Yeah, that, sorry. Probably a lot of people were asking, why the two Nahiris? Because she also finds the combo.
Well, she's also an incredibly important removal spell for a lot of things that we have problems dealing with, like ginormous creatures. Mm-hmm. You know, if our Reflector Mage isn't there, we don't have the cord, that she can just come down and exile them. But she also deals with, you know, Authority of the Councils and problem enchantments very, very easily. Her loyalty's super high. So even if you just play it and plus her, they're going to have to attack her, which is going to gain you a ton of life. Put a Planeswalker in your graveyard, turn on Delirium for Ishkana.
Yeah, it's so far of all the decks I'm very, very happy with this deck right now. We'll probably keep brewing it, so stay tuned every week. Who knows? We may find even better ways to tune it, or add toolboxes to it, or make variations on it. It's just, you know, once Aether Revolt's legal in Frontier, once we get it in, what, a week, I think, next week, we're going to get our cards. We're going to be jamming it in the first Frontier tournament we can, because it looks fun. So,
well, from there, do you want to talk about some shiny stuff?
I do. Because obviously now that we he's a bad influence on me, by the way.
You're welcome.
He shows me decks that are so beautiful. It's disgusting. But a couple of cards that we think, like, we want to talk about and have a kind of a reoccurring segment about shiny stuff is, you know, everyone likes foils, but not every foil is worth the money. Some of them are way overpriced. But there's a lot of foils that are out there are actually cheaper, like Goblin Rabble Master. The promo art, I believe, or the buy box promo was cheaper than the regular version.
Yep.
I don't know if it still is. But Tony goes through every week and he tries to, you know, find those underpriced ones or just sick art versions. And so what do we got this week for them?
So this week is we're sticking to the green theme. So the basic premise is you could use the original Ravnica foil Court of Calling, which would be super, super sweet in Frontier. It shows that, you know, maybe it came from your Modern collection. Maybe you've had it in Standard back in the day. But the two that I really like this week are Elvish Visionary and Elvish Mystic. They both have really, really sick promos. Elvish Visionary has a promo all the way back from June 2010. This is the Visionary. It's got the F&M logo in the background. It's got the really sweet art. It almost looks like Eternal Witness style, like a Tyrese Nielsen feeling art to it. It looks really, really sweet. And as a one of in your deck, I think it's really cool to have the alternate art on it. And Elvish Mystic, I actually have the foil Japanese promo of it because I got it, I think, for $3 or $4.
Yeah, I mean,
and they didn't always do foreign promos. That was something that they started. Actually, the very first one was Jace's Ingenuity in July of 2011. So they really haven't been, you know, 6 years they started doing foreign promos. So if that's your thing, and you're looking for a more recent promo, you can definitely find some sweet Japanese versions.
Yeah, and the one that I tried to get recently too is the Stoke to Flames. I can't remember if it's the buy box or the F&M version.
It's Stoke to Flames is from the F&M.
Yeah, okay. That one is just, I think it's got the best art, and it's like $1. So, you know, that's just a list, not necessarily in this list, but it's one to keep an eye on. Also, I think, personally, I'm going to try to find the Ugin Master of the Unseens. I know you have some. They're quite pretty. The Ugin alternate art. Those
from the Ugin's Fate booster packs. Yeah.
Yeah, that's like great. It's very nice. I just think that that card is a card to watch. You know, I feel like that card is just so powerful in this format. And anytime someone's trying to do a control thing, that card is almost impossible to answer. You know, unless people start changing the metagame. But right now, it's something to watch. It now. Let's move on because we're getting near the end of the show. Last week we had pretty big news. Actually, it all relates together, so we'll talk about everything. We had a release from the new president talking about the future of Magic, potentially Magic Digital Next, and I believe it was just a marketing type exercise to say, hey guys, we've got new stuff coming, calm down.
Yeah, it was basically WotC's hashtag hype.
It pretty much was, yeah. And it probably was more geared towards investors and not the public. It was designed to make investors be like, hey, you guys got some new product you're releasing. The verbiage in there is pretty generic stuff. They talk about, like, maybe we could play a Pokemon Go-style version of Magic, which I have zero interest in. But you know what? Maybe my kids would love that, so I'm fine with that. The big part of the thing we wanted to talk about is, you know, worth. He left the company, so he is no longer in charge of Magic Digital, that entire arm, which says a lot to me. I'm not going to talk too much about, like, what Worth did in the past, just because, you know, no one is surprised where Magic is right now. I'm not saying it was anyone's particular, that's a word, particular fault. But, you know, ships are led, so the leader kind of led us in a direction. Now, there could be all kinds of reasons why, but the point is Magic Digital in general, that includes, you know, duels and MTGO, is kind of poor right now and it needs to be fixed. So there's a lot of things that could happen. So he's out. My reading of that tea leaves sounds to me like what happened is they are restructuring the entire digital organization. So that's why he's out. Probably because they're just going to redo a lot of things. Now, a lot of people on Twitter have talked about, oh man, MTGO is going to be gone. There's going to be a single client. It's going to have everything in it. And that's, I mean, from my standpoint, who's someone in marketing for 20 years and works in programming and understands things, that a company has a brand universe and an IP. And when that filters down, the more products you have, the more engagement you have. And that's important. So the idea that there will only ever be one Magic Online client and it would be a perfect thing called Magic Digital Next is not true. That's never going to happen. It just makes no sense. Number one, you can go back in the archives 5 years and listen to Heavy Meta and you can hear us talk about the player journey. And that was when we were getting into Magic Online and there was no Magic Duels. And it was horrendous. It was horrendously horrible bad. And I probably think 1% of people who tried to get on Magic Online stayed. So you cannot have a beginner level product like that. You need to have duels. Duels' sole job is not to provide enfranchised players with enjoyment. It's to teach new players the game. That's all it is. So it's a loss leader. It's designed to just make people understand how to play this very, very complex game.
And that's actually great because that's where you can put the, like, cool art where creatures attack mm-hmm. each other and things explode because that's what those players want to see.
Exactly. And then the very opposite end of that spectrum, of course, is MTGO, which is a super complicated program designed to mimic real life paper. That's really what it is. And it's for people like, kind of like me, who don't have infinite amounts of time and also may live in, you know, obscurely far areas away from a local game store. So to shut down those people is kind of crazy. There is also, remember, the pros. If the pros don't have an actual client that is a mimic of paper, I think it's going to hurt them. I think they would complain. So that brings us to what's in the middle now. Now, they've said Magic Digital Next resides in the middle of this. And I agree. That's what's going to happen. So Duels probably stays. Maybe it gets changed a bit to mimic more what Magic Digital Next offers. I'm not sure. And then you've got MTGO, which hopefully just gets fixed. Like, I would love a version 5 or 6 or I don't know what version we're on anymore, but a new one. Essentially, that is just it's the closest thing to paper Magic done digitally. I think that's just what that client should be. Now, you got this giant chunk of ground in the middle. Hearthstone is essentially, that's what Magic needs to be. They need a clone of Hearthstone that sits in there that maybe is not Magic. and to you. And this is important. A lot of people are like, how are we going to cast instants and enchantments? And I'm like, you're not. Maybe what they would do is just take the IP, the idea of what magic is. It's a planeswalker, you know, and it fights other planeswalkers. And it's not a MMO or a fighting game. It would be like Hearthstone, where you're like, choose a planeswalker. I choose Jace. Okay, great. Now cast spells from Jace's library. Boom, boom, boom. And there's no mana. And I really believe like that's kind of going to be something that a lot of people can get into very quickly. There's very little learning curve. And that's what they want. It's just a different way to play Magic. Now, this cannibalization issue that people say, well, if you offer me that, I'm out. I'm not playing MTGO anymore. Okay, that's fine. Remember, though, maybe you never were supposed to be playing MTGO. Because that's like they've just moved your money that you were spending to a different part of their sucking machine that sucks money in. They didn't lose anything. Right, you only have a certain amount of hours in the day. It very, very rarely these less than 1% people who consume the entire range of product line. I know people like me and Tony probably would not play that much Magic Digital Next. Maybe it's amazing, and we all do. But point is,
on my phone, I'm probably playing it.
Well, that's a different story. If they actually get a full platform that runs on all iOSs, that's going to be a big winner. But regardless, that's probably going to be a big winner for Magic. It has nothing to do with the digital version. It's just probably going to be very good for the brand.
Correct.
And Hasbro. But like, if I want to draft a cube, like I want to draft Vintage Cube, then that's what I'm going to go do. Again, if I want to just like, I got 20 minutes on the bus to work, and I want to, you know, smash some creatures together, maybe I'm playing Magic Digital next. But I'm not completely never going to play another one once I play one. So I really believe it's just allowing to offer you choice, which is important. Again, and this goes back to what we were talking about before about formats. Formats in paper Magic are just the same. They're choices. So maybe 1 week I want to play Modern. Maybe 1 week I want to play Frontier. No format is bad. No format is like destroying another one. It's choice. It's like owning a PlayStation. So, you know, you buy, I regret buying a PS4 because I'm like, the games I want to play aren't here. So I don't play it. So think of it like Magic. If Magic offers you one way to play and one way only, well, you better like to play that way. And if you don't, you don't play. So I really believe like we need to get on with understanding that, you know, every different way to play this game, whether it's digital or real, is good. It's just good. It allows people to find their niche and get in it. And, you know, at the end of the day, Wizards of the Coast makes money, which keeps this game alive.
Yep.
So last point I wanted to touch on because it was so ludicrous. People were saying, you know, oh, Magic Digital Next is going to take over and the game will die. Hasbro is a company who currently, their sole business model is resurrecting things from the 1980s and making billions of dollars at it. I'm not going to say anything else. So there's nothing that needs to be said. They are not ever going to let Magic die. It's too profitable and they're just going to keep resurrecting it. I guarantee you there's going to be original 90s Magic. Go play with crappy art and and bad graphics, you know. And who knows, man? I mean, it's never going anywhere. But
well, I mean, that's completely obvious by just them actually doing throwback drafts, right? That's them doing that already by saying, hey, you remember this? We can't provide it to you, the experience in paper, because that just is not going to work. But we can provide it to you in this online atmosphere. And I know people who, out of these flashback drafts they've been doing all year, skip some and play some and call in sick when time spirals on.
No comment. You
know,
no comment.
And same thing with the, you know, the Legacy Cube or the Holiday Cube. Like,
yeah.
This is a perfect example of exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah. And, you know, from my point of view, because I'm heavily invested in MTGO for a long time now, and I have a very large collection because essentially I use it to brew decks and play Modern and Frontier now and some standard games. So, you know, if they suddenly said, by the way, you know, you can't log in, we destroyed the client, and, you know, remember that thing you signed, your digital agreement that says, you know, don't own any cards, and you're screwed. Obviously, that would make me pretty upset. Would it make me quit the game? I don't know. But it would be a very substantial loss in terms of thousands of dollars, and it's not even just the loss, it's just the mistreatment of, wow, I'm worth that much to you guys? You just shut me off and expect me to just switch over? So I don't believe, like, if they haven't screwed the reserve list over yet, I have a very good feeling that they probably look at that and say, oh, Now, the other thing people don't realize is I'm just a collector with a couple thousand dollars in there. There's bots with hundreds of thousands of dollars. And if you go look at the bot list, there's like, what, a couple hundred bots? Those guys, if they suddenly said, shut down Magic, screw you guys, I think they would do what's called a class action lawsuit. And I think it would be bigger than a reserve list one. So I'm fairly confident that they wouldn't choose this direction of just shutting off Magic Online one day, that there may be some port over or option or, you know, I mean, I'm sure, you know, in a bad case scenario, they say, hey, you have the X, you know, collection. Here's a bunch of free drafts in the new client, you know, for eternity, because that's useless to me. And that would suck too, but at least they tried. Hopefully we get more clarity. That's why I try to tweet Lee Sharp. I suggest you tweet them too, and ask questions. Because if we don't ask questions of them, then they believe that no one cares.
Correct. That was actually incredibly evident with these recent standard bannings, right? Mm-hmm. It went from 0 to 60 in, you know, the matter of a week or so, where Sam Stoddard posted on Twitter and said, hey, what do you guys think about this? Holy smokes, you guys don't like it? Okay, well, we should probably sit in this board meeting and talk about that. Because they do listen to the feedback when they got it, and they got tons of feedback on this.
Yeah, and so I guess it comes down to randomly tweeting, this sucks, this sucks, this sucks, and the internet does nothing. When a point of contact for the game you like says, let me know what you guys think, that's when your time is valuable. And we always try to say, hey, that's your point of engagement, get to it. You know, and don't just tell them they're garbage. Try to, like, give them an insightful opinion. Even if you don't like it, you can say, hey, by the way, I really didn't like it. Here's why. And look what happened. So I hope we get some more digital clarity on MTGO, because I still do like the program. It doesn't really work well, and there's a lot of bugs right now. That's a given. Did you like my white mana leaks?
Yeah, your blue condemns. But what I did like was the fact that we had a tool to brew with that was relatively easy to use, fairly clear to see and understand, and that both of us could share the same experience. I did really like that.
I did too. And you know, if you guys want to see that more, we were thinking of like ideas where maybe we'll film, you know, us brewing an MTGO and you can hear our thoughts and how we're working it, or, you know, it'd be great to do deck techs in them like Saffron Olive does. You know, we're going to get there.
And who knows, maybe that's when Kraken Rum enters the podcast for the first time. It's a late night brew session. Who knows? Who knows? We're both adults.
Hey, yeah, that's fine. And I mean, that would be very interesting. I also wanted to just make the one point that Magic's promotion tool that they fully don't understand and don't utilize correctly is MTGO. Go look at Twitch. 99% of people are on MTGO. Streaming. That's how like all Goldfish, all of Saffron, all his blue brews and videos, and Rogue Deck Builder, and all the people that you watch, you know, Chape and LSV, who doesn't do them anymore. But the point is, if you took that client away from them and gave them like a Hearthstone client, I'm not going to watch that. But again, maybe I'm not the target market, right? So I wouldn't watch that, because there's no point. It's just watching guys smash shit. But maybe that's Hearthstone gets hundreds of thousands of viewers. Maybe that's the future, which is fine, you know? And at the end of the day, people, realize this. Look at antiques. If one day this game blows up and it's gone, there are billions, if not trillions, of paper cards that exist in the world, let alone in me and Tony's collections.
Yeah, seriously. You actually got to see the Frontier box.
Which is brilliant, by the way. We'll get to that in a future episode where we talk about collection sorting, because I need help with that. I do not like touching paper things. It's just such a pain. I've sorted
a few Magic cards in my time.
You have a very good system, and I really like that idea, especially with where Frontier is going forward. Just creating a Frontier box, which is really good, because then you're not necessarily like worried about a deck. You know, you're like, I'm going to go through my collection and pull all the cards that are viable in the format. And then as a deck comes up, I can quickly reference, oh, I got half these cards, you know, and that's just a really smart way to do it. I like that idea. So, people, in closing, I wanted to give two things out to people. I want a huge shout out to Les. Who is Les on Twitter? You should follow
him.
Who is Les?
Les is the man. That's who Les is.
Les Kershaw, he's been a long time a Heavy Meta SVU supporter way back in the day. One of the fellow down unders, as we call him. He's already taking our branding and the Hype Club merch, and he's like, he's going crazy. He's making all kinds of amazing desktops and stuff. So that's awesome. We love that, and we encourage anyone who wants to, you know, take the brand and make something cool with it, and we'll share it with the community. That's sweet. We love it. Huge shout out to you. Update on the merch. We're doing testing right now. We're going to order some stuff. Our first run is going to be based on the poll that I did on Twitter. We're going to do high quality. Probably going to be a little expensive, but they're going to be high quality, like the best shirts you've ever seen. Do those as a limited run for the people that want them. And then, you know, everyone who's, you know, budget conscious and is like, hey, you know, we might not be able to afford a $30 shirt or a $35 shirt. Do you got a $20 option? Maybe we'll throw it on Teespring and boom, we'll get it out to everybody. Because we do. There's a lot of summer GPs coming up, including Vegas. We want to see everyone rep your favorite stuff. So, till next time, my friend. This is Hype Club.
Hype Hype!
Thundercats, ow!
Ow!
Snark, snark, right?
That's, yeah.